The punk music scene in Tallahassee from the late 1970s to the mid-1990s was one of the most explosive punk eras in the nation, bringing acts like Black Flag, Bad Brains, Iggy Pop, and Sonic Youth to the capital city. Well, some 30-odd years later, the punk music scene swept over the capital city again with a month-long curated art exhibit, concert series, band reunions, and other radical programming. Today, we sit down with the man that facilitated it. Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Warehouse. I'm your host, Josh Johnson, and like always, we are joined by an incredibly special guest. So today, we have joining us John Blyer, who is somebody who I think bridges a lot of gaps, generational gaps, scene gaps, community gaps. But you were most well known for being the founder of the Tallahassee Punk Archive. You spent a lot of time on the punk music scene when you were living here years ago, up until modernity with some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today. You know, there's an old Malcolm X quote that says, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock, Plymouth Rock landed on us. Well, this weekend, punk rock landed on Tallahassee, and you were the great force behind that. And so all things punk and punk music we're going to talk about today with our guest, John Blyer. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Josh.
Absolutely. So with a person that holds so much of a specific community knowledge, I just want to jump right in and tell us and the listeners a little bit about what it was like in that precipice of Tallahassee in the 1980s with the punk music scene.
Well, Tallahassee, I think, was a little bit unique. You know, if you consider the context of punk generally, it's widely thought that there was, and I agree, that there was a lot of sanitized rock, commercial, you know, rock at the time. Disco was becoming very popular, and punk rock was largely considered to be sort of a rejection of that. Mm-hmm. And I would say in Tallahassee, there was a little bit more to it. I used, for example, as a jumping off point at the recent exhibition, the Pioneers of Punk exhibition at 621, this incident that happened in December 1975, where a youth pastor at a local church by the name of Reverend Charles Boykin gathered his flock of young disciples and burned a whole bunch of rock records, you know, decrying the moral decay that they caused of our youth and promoting promiscuity and so forth. And so to me, I think probably in the South largely, but certainly in Tallahassee, that punk was also a bit of a rejection of religious conservatism.
So, you know, that is such an interesting point because we are in the Bible Belt, right? But I've taken on this type of responsibility in a way of putting the flag of art and culture for Tallahassee on my back. And one of the biggest arguments that I see for why people don't like Tallahassee as much as I think they should is because of what Tallahassee used to be and how cool it used to be. And so that's kind of a cognitive dissonance that while you guys were actually pioneers in forging land that a lot of people back then didn't want you forging, it's also a strong juxtaposition to today because it almost seems like you guys were able to pull off more back then. What do you credit that to? Because of the pressures, or was it just the countercultural attitude of the genre that you were dealing in?
I think there was a freshness to it then, which probably gave it energy. I think also a real key factor was that the punk and underground music scene was not homogenous by any means. It attracted a lot of different creative types. Mm-hmm. The art community was certainly enmeshed in the local punk and underground scene. The literary community, a lot of folks who worked for the Flambeau, for example, were part of the punk and underground scene. So there was really just this fostering of creativity, I think, more generally.
That sounds incredible. Let's talk about this cross-pollination of genres or mediums of art that coalesced in the punk scene, which is also an art itself. I didn't mean to make it sound like it wasn't. But let's start with like visual art, like even with the t-shirt that you're wearing today, mm-hmm. with the show that you brought into town. Mm-hmm. There was such a visual element to it that you couldn't extract that from the music, even if you tried. How did that kind of spool out? How were visual artists in this scene just as much as the music, or in whatever degree they were in?
Mm. Good question. I would say that, for example, Ka Chapel and Ka Warehouse, which was more or less the same entity at two different locations, mm-hmm. Was a really popular venue, and it was actually founded initially as an art space. They started booking punk shows, and my guess is anyway that the punk shows just became more popular and more profitable,
sure.
And so it became more known for that. But again, it started as a space for performing arts and art. As I said, there was just these creative elements were entwined within the scene very much. I assume that's still the case today. I'm not as familiar, but it was certainly the case then. And then with the flyers, that was just really a byproduct of the DIY, the do-it-yourself culture that mm-hmm. sprung from the punk scene. And so we had some just really excellent graphic artists and creative artists who made a lot of those flyers.
You were right. It is a lot like that today. You know, whether it's COVID or the closing of businesses or city construction or whatever mitigating factors get in the way of, you know, housing and facilitating people have to pivot. And so when you brought up Ka Chapel, having to make that pivot, while it was a absolute pivot because they started as one thing and kind of evolved or devolved, however you want to say it, in the nature of punk. But if they were started as a house of art and punk made it its home, it still was true to its mission, you know, because music is just as high integrity of art form as anything else, as I'm sure you know. I just wanted to say that it is still like that, but the pivot is more effortless, probably because of the foundation that people like you laid so early on for people like me and, you know, Scott Bell over at Cat Family Records or whoever's still doing art and culture work here. It's right. A little more streamlined for us, probably because of the grand sacrifices. Another thing that I want to talk about, and you brought it up in your last answer, whenever I am talking about punk music, and I am a peripheral fan of punk music.
Sure.
I love punk music, but I have never just been directly in that scene. The three initials that I hear the most, or the word that I hear the most, is DIY. Talk to me a little bit about that. Why was it so necessary to do it yourself in the punk scene?
Well, especially back then, this was before punk was co-opted commercially. So, you know, you didn't have big budget record labels, you know, promoting your record. You had to do it yourself. You had to, you know, you had to promote your shows yourself. And so, you know, you see that in everything from show promotion to even the venues themselves were just people in the scene, you know, creating spaces where these performances, these events could happen.
When you talk about the co-opting commercially of an art form, specifically punk, do you see it, this is just your personal opinion, do you see it as a good thing, a pejorative thing, a bad thing, or a necessary thing?
I see it as kind of an ultimate thing
mm-hmm.
that is going to happen. If you study youth subculture, it seems to be the case that they ultimately get co-opted, hegemonized by, you know, larger forces. That's just been the case every time.
With everything.
Yeah, starting, you know, if you can go back to, you know, the mods in England, punk is a good example. There are other examples. Dick Hebdige is, you know, his theories, you know, align very much with this thinking. You know, I read his book in college and studied it a bit and pretty much subscribed to his way of thinking, which is that eventually any youth subculture is going to be co-opted and commercialized. You know, if there's that potential for it, it's going to happen.
Absolutely. You sound like a former guest we had on, Thomas Bacot, who said the same thing about tattooing, right? And people use words like fad or mainstream, but it's really just a co-opting of something cool that somebody else can profit off of. And
essentially, yes.
That was a perfect, maybe you should run for office. That was the perfectly political answer. It's neither good or bad, but it
I've
is
been
ultimate.
Told. Yeah. Funny you say that.
It is ultimate. So let's get back into some of the nuts and bolts. And the biggest nut and the most sturdy bolt is what you have bought to Tallahassee over the month of March in 2026. Let's talk about, first of all, what you did. Mm-hmm. And then once you tell us what you did, I want to know the why.
Sure. So you know, I'll have to step back for a second in order to answer that and say that about 10 years ago, roughly, I started becoming more aware of regional punk archival work. I have a friend who does it for Denver. I was very much aware of what the 309 folks are doing in Pensacola. There are other folks doing this where they were documenting and archiving their local or regional scenes, and no one was doing it for Tallahassee. And as someone who grew up then and was very much shaped by the experiences then, I did not want that history to be lost, so I took it upon myself to start researching, documenting, collecting ephemera, et cetera, in order to create, you know, a robust archive of Tallahassee's early punk scene.
And then, John, the second part of that question is, now that you've informed us on the why, you know, the importance of doing that work, tell us what it was that you did and how it culminated into this month's Pioneer of Punk show.
I'd had in mind, I put out a few records, starting with Trouble with a Capital T, which was a compilation record of 1980s Tallahassee punk and underground music. And that was very well received.
Which, by the way, is one of the most popular T-shirts in Tallahassee. I mean, to see that, yes, absolutely. You did incredible work with that.
Oh, well, thank you. And I released a few other records, but I'd kind of had in mind for a while doing an exhibit, especially as my flyer collection grew. I knew a lot of people would want to see these flyers, but so few were able to, especially with my being based in San Diego and having this massive collection. So I applied with 621 to do an exhibit, and then in the course thereof, kind of decided to go big, basically. I put together an organizing team, and we decided to do a concert series around the exhibit, as well as some just additional programming. We had book readings, we had a panel discussion, all kinds of other programming around the exhibit itself.
A market.
Correct. We did, yep, we did a flea market. And the concert series was incredibly well received. We had it at three different locations over 4 days, close to 30 bands. Several of those bands were, you know, throwback bands that hadn't performed in some cases for decades.
Sure.
And so there was just a lot of just great energy around it. And we're actually now already preparing to do the concert series again and perhaps make it annual.
Oh, man, that would be such an incredible addition to the fabric of Tallahassee. You know, if we are a quilt, something like that that stays as a square and isn't just a contributing square would be perfect. Let me give you a pat on the back in my own way for a second. Seeing people, for example, like Donnie Crenshaw, right,
yep,
walk into the gallery this weekend,
yep,
was just a decoration of a social check mark that I can't really even explain to you. You did something that is incredibly important, and you brought up a word in your last answer, which was ephemera, right? The paper products or the products that might not remain from a history that's so important. You in your own right are just the manifestation of that principle. I want to ask you a very specific question. As technology increases, whether it's AI or digital effects or programming or just whatever, how important is it that ephemera, whether it's the comic book or the flyer or the note, how important is it for us as humans that we hold on to that history?
I think it's really important if you want context, you know. A lot of those materials, I mean, they're called ephemera for a reason. They were, you know, made to be discarded. And the fact that so much of it remains really provides tremendous context to the narrative, to the story, to the time and place,
yeah,
that I'm interested in documenting. So, yeah, without the ephemera, you really don't have much of a story.
Sure. For a 22-year-old college student who might be listening to this program and is like, man, that Josh Johnson guy is okay, but whoever this John Blyer is just the coolest. Give that person a throwback of a venue that some of the venues that you had to deal with while you were actually on the scene. You know, resurrect some of those spaces for us. OK Club.
Well, I already met. Yep, the OK Club was kind of the first. I mean, The godfathers of Tallahassee punk, if you will, was this band called the Slut Boys. And in December of 1979, for $100 a month, they signed a lease with this little space that they titled the OK Club. It was on, I believe, the west side, if I'm not mistaken, of the Civic Center, although at the time the Civic Center was just being constructed. Mm-hmm. And it was a building that had a few storefronts. My understanding is that within that building at one time there was a brothel, so it had a bit of a seedy past. And the OK Club, there's actually video that I posted on my Panhandle Punk YouTube page of the Slut Boys performing there. They would basically hold all-night parties at this rehearsal space, and it would attract a lot of college kids and others, and people would just dance all night. The Slut Boys were, I mean, they were very punk-informed, but they were really kind of just high-energy bar rock with, you know, again, a bit of a punk flair and even a little bit of a southern tinge, I would say, if I were going to describe them. So, yeah, the OK Club was kind of the first, I would say, a couple in the 80s that were just, you know, really renowned and that ended up bringing in a lot of touring acts was Ka, that I mentioned earlier. Ka Chapel particularly hosted, you know, a lot of amazing bands like Circle Jerks, Black Flag, Bad Brains, Sonic Youth. I could go on. And then after Ka folded, Planet 10 stepped into the breach. Planet 10 hosted a lot of great touring punk bands. I could go on and on, but SNFU and many, many others. And they also, you know, were just a great place to promote local bands. So those two spaces, they were, you know, very, you know, they promoted all ages shows. I believe every show at those places was all ages. And again, very inclusive spaces. So those were the kind of places that really back then built the foundation, I would say, for similar spaces that we use today for our event.
So you've done this incredible job of painting a picture of what used to be. From your facilitation of this event, how did the community respond for you in this modern, in today's language?
It was pretty overwhelming, to tell you the truth, Josh. I did not expect, I mean, I knew people would receive this well, or I wouldn't have pursued it as much as I did. But the amount of just profound appreciation that was heaped on me was pretty intense. And I would say that, you know, while you might expect that to be limited to the, you know, the old heads, if you will, the old punk rockers, I've been really impressed with how many younger folks, college kids and even younger, have expressed to me their appreciation and, you know, just follow me on Instagram, enjoy the exhibit. So yeah, I would say that it's beyond my expectations is the answer.
I love that you feel what we have seen, because I introduced you, when I introduced the spot, I said that you're a bridge builder. And I meant that, the fire and the buzz around this show for the 6 to 7 months that preceded it, it seemed to be just as equal between, as you call them, old heads to people that are 21 and 22. It has really just been a collection and a display of community that I am fortunate enough to see all the time because of the type of work that I do, whether it's here or wherever. But if you didn't think that Tallahassee had stuff like that, you have shown us that not only do we, but the ground is ripe to grow those types of fruit. And in the vein of growing those fruit, you mentioned a little earlier that it could be an ambition for this to recur. Do you have any trajectory on how you're going to do that?
We do. So, yeah, we've already reformulated an organizing team. And we're looking at basically taking the concert series portion of what we just did and replicating it next year. It'll take place again the first weekend in March. We already have, you know, the same venues pretty much committed to participating. We may even expand that. We already have several bands that have committed and we're talking with many others. So this is probably going to become, our goal is to basically make it annual. I haven't really committed to that, but that's our goal. Basically an annual celebration of Tallahassee punk. We're going to feature, you know, Tallahassee punk bands with, again, with a focus on reuniting and, you know, old school punk bands. But we want punk bands of all eras to participate in this, as we did this year. You know, that was part of our thinking, was to make it as inclusive as possible.
In closing this spot, I would like to say to you that in your original answer, you mentioned a few words that I thought were incredible. One was unique, one was sanitized, and the other was moral decay. In closing, I would like for you to know that we appreciate you for bringing something unique to us. We would like to thank you for remaining unsanitized so that you had the wherewithal to do it. And as far as moral decay is concerned, in the Church of Punk, we are now praying to one of the high priests. We appreciate you so much, John, and we appreciate you at home for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. See you next time. Bye-bye.